He assumes his throne for the sake of justice. He will establish justice in the world rightly. He will judge all people fairly. The Lord is a safe place for the oppressed, a safe place in difficult times. Those who know your name trust you because you have not abandoned any who seek you, Lord. Sing praises to the Lord who lives in Zion. Proclaim his mighty acts among all people, because the one who avenges bloodshed remembers those who suffer. The Lord hasn't forgotten their cries for help. Have mercy on me, Lord. Just look how I suffer because of those who hate me. But you are the one who brings me back from the very gates of death, so I can declare all your praises, so I can rejoice in your salvation in the gates of daughter Zion.
So at this time, if there are any kids in the congregation that would like to go downstairs with Priscilla.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yes, that should be good. Thank you. So I'm Elise. If you guys don't remember, it's a hard name to remember, so I will forgive you, forget my name. And I am a student at NNU. I am a senior ministry major. I have had several classes with Joe, and I have a class with Christina right now. Hello, Christina. I've never called her that before. She's always been Dr. Smirik, but now we're in church, so I get to call her first name. So feeling pretty fancy right now. So if you guys are anything like me, when we read our scripture from Leviticus, you probably just tuned everything out, because whenever you get to like long lists of laws or genealogy, you're like, what's the point of this? This is boring. Like, I just want to read a story about Jesus doing a miracle or something. So, but today, please don't be disappointed in me for saying that, Christina, talking about the Bible poorly. But today, we're going to be looking at the laws in the Old Testament, and we're going to be talking about how these things try to shape us and what their greater purpose is. And so how many of you have ever had to follow any rules before? Anybody? If you have parents, you had to follow rules. So maybe in school you had a teacher who would assign you to study your flashcards for 15 minutes every day, or did anybody have to like write each of your vocabulary words like 20 times over and over and over again, and you're like, this is stupid. My teacher just wants to torture me and they hate children and this is why I'm doing this. Or maybe you played a sport and you remember your endless hours of practice and conditioning. Maybe you had to wake up early every morning and you were so sore that you could like barely put your pants on the next day. And a lot of us have probably followed a lot of rules or practices in our life. Another image that comes to my mind, touched on, is parenting and the specific struggle of bedtime. I was a devil baby, and I would never go to sleep ever, and I screamed and cried, and I don't know why my parents kept me. But as I grew up, I became a more tired person. Like, I'm ready to go to bed by like 9 p.m. every night now. But my brothers, I heard that, yes, 9 p.m. bedtimers, we're here. But my brothers, as they grew up, started staying up later and later, and if my parents didn't force them to go to bed, they'd stay up until like 4 a.m. playing video games. And I know. And then you let your kids go off to college, and that's crazy because then they have no rules and they just get to do whatever they want. And so many college students like hang out with their friends until midnight and then start their homework, and they're doing homework till like 3 a.m. and then they have an 8 a.m. the next day. Yeah, we're crazy. And you very quickly learn why your parents gave you those rules. So when we look at the book of Leviticus, we see a lot of these rules. But in order for us to understand these rules, we'll have to look at where Israel is coming from. So before God delivered Israel, they lived in Egypt, and they were under the reign of Pharaoh. Some of us might be familiar with this story. And life under Pharaoh was really bad. I recently read a book by Walter Brueggemann, and he describes how Pharaoh ran things as a ruler. And so Pharaoh was regarded as a god. Like, if you were under the reign of Pharaoh, you had to trust Pharaoh as a godlike figure. And so whenever he placed crazy demands on people, you had to follow them. And Egypt's socioeconomic power was kind of organized like a pyramid. Get it? Pyramid? Because Egyptians? Thank you. But their socioeconomic power was organized like a pyramid. So basically, you have the working class on the bottom, and everything that they produced is channeled up to the wealthy, elitist people, which included Pharaoh. And so, even though Pharaoh had all of this power and he got all of these resources and people had to respect him like a god, he was also a very anxious man. Because things like famine and drought were not under his control. And when we have leaders who try to maintain a godlike figure, they get really anxious about things that are under their control. And so he would act out in this anxiety and he would just put more demanding rules on the working class, which happens to be the Israelites where we are looking today. And he basically treated the Israelites like they were machines that constantly needed to be producing more and more. And in this system, because the focus is on producing, it's natural to treat your neighbor like a threat or a competitor. And because the Israelites were treated like machines, not humans, it was okay to lie to people, to cheat people, to take advantage of people. Because Pharaoh was not a god concerned about being a good neighbor. Pharaoh was concerned with producing and having power. And so Pharaoh's practices and laws had been shaping the Israelites to be an anxious, fearful people that treated each other like machines, not neighbors. So when God delivers Israel from slavery, God has to teach them that they are no longer slaves to a system that oppresses them and takes advantage of them, but they are now children of God. And so they're called to reflect the image of God, not the image of Pharaoh any longer. And so when we look at verse 2 in chapter 19, it says, "Speak to the entire assembly of Israel and say to them, 'Be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy.'" And immediately God is showing us that a call to holiness is a call to reflect God's image. That God isn't like Pharaoh. God doesn't ask us to do things that God isn't already doing. And before God commands Israel to do anything, God reminds them that they are no longer slaves to Pharaoh, but they now belong to the one true God. And they probably heard this and they're like, okay, cool, we're supposed to be like God. That's not like intimidating. Like, what does that even look like? And so we, as we go through these verses, and we see verses 3 through 8, we see all these laws about sacrifices and you're not supposed to eat it on the second day or the third day or you'll be like kicked out of the community, and this makes no sense to us. And these laws probably seem the most distant to us today, but as we read them, we see that holiness embraces every aspect of life, whether that's ethical or ritual practices. And this sacrifice of well-being that the Israelites are commanded to make in these verses is a way that they showed that they were at peace with God. That you have done good in the name of God. That you have confessed the ways that you have wronged God. And that you are grateful for God's provision in your life. Because I know for me, it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking that I am where I am today. Or I have what I have today because of all the hard work that I've done. Or maybe it's easy for the parent to fall into the trap of thinking that their kids are so amazing because of the way that they were a parent and all the amazing ways that they did things as a parent. Or it's easy for the student to fall into the trap of thinking that, oh, I have good grades because I studied hard. Look at what I did. It's easy for the business person to think, look at all of my success due to everything that I have accomplished. It's easy for us today to fall into the trap of believing that we are here and we have what we have because of our own hard work. But this practice of sacrifice that the Israelites had to do reminded them who their provider was. And I think this is powerful for us today. Our individualism tempts us to think that we take care of ourselves. We're independent. We pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. We take care of ourselves. And while I'm not ready to say that we should just start sacrificing animals everywhere, I think that there are some practices that we can take on to shape us to be a grateful people that acknowledge that God is our provider. Some people like to sit down and journal 3 things every morning that they're grateful for. Some people like writing thank you letters to someone that has made an impact in their life. One of my pastors used to say that unexpressed gratitude is ingratitude. And it becomes very evident how much you respect the people in your life, how much you respect your servers or your baristas when your food is running a little late or you're in a rush. It becomes very evident how highly you regard others when you're trying to drive in Idaho. At least it does for me. So there are ways that we can show gratitude to the people around us. As we keep reading, verses 9 and 10 say, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God." When I read this, I feel like it's God's way of saying, in order to be at peace with me, you must take care of those in need. If you want to show me true gratitude, then you need to show generosity to others. God's law calls us out of ourselves and rejects individualism. These laws integrate care for the poor and the immigrant into their harvest and gathering seasons, a very normal practice. They're not supposed to reap the corners or pick up the things that have fallen. Instead, they're supposed to give these things to those who are in need. God is teaching Israel that a holy life reflects a high regard for other people. God isn't telling them to go out and solve all the world's problems or spend every single extra hour of your day volunteering or to do this and go make more big systems and do this and do this. God is taking a very normal practice that everybody in their time did, regardless of their religion. God's taking farming and saying, as God's people, you are going to do this very normal thing in a very unique, holy way that serves those around you. And I think today, we have a lot of voices or powers that sound a lot like Pharaoh. Our nation is filled with political division. It isn't hard to see that. It seems that our nation is filled with significant acts of hatred or violence. And because of this, it's easy for us to become an anxious, violent, fearful people. We are told to pursue the American dream, to achieve as much as we can, and keep producing and achieving and making, and we can become slaves to this rhythm. But these laws in Leviticus show us that God is trying to shape us into a compassionate, selfless people who do normal things just like everybody else, but just in a different way that is holy and loving to others. I think it's as tiny as asking ourselves, where do I go get my hair cut? Where do I go shopping? Where do I go to eat? The people that I interact with in those mundane situations, how am I showing them love? How am I getting to know their story? Because I know that some of these have been the most impactful moments for us, right? Like, you go to get your coffee and someone smiles at you and tells you your hair looks nice, but you feel like you're a wreck that day. And those are some of the most impactful moments in your life. And you're like, I'm going to hold on to that, even though I'm running off of 5 hours of sleep. But those are the moments that can impact us. And I think God is trying to shape the things that we are already doing to be holier. Now, as we look through verses 11 through 18, this sounds like God is just lecturing them, like he's a parent, like, stop stealing, stop lying, like, stop fighting and just get along for 5 seconds. But I think as we look at life under Pharaoh earlier in their lives, made your neighbor your competitor. It made your neighbor someone to feel threatened by. And so it was normal to take advantage of people if you needed to get business done. It was normal to lie and cheat people because you were just an object, and your neighbor was just an object, and you were always in a mode of defense where you're trying to protect your family and provide for yourself, and there's a lot of anxiety. But we understand that God's primary characteristic is love, that God is love. And so as God's people, God is trying to shape us to be a people who people can look at and say their primary characteristic is love. And I think this carries into our relationships with others, as we see in these verses 11 through 18, that holiness is acted out in community, and we do not lie to each other, we don't deceive to each other, we don't oppress each other, we don't hold grudges or take revenge, but as children of God, we view each other with respect, and we act out of love. And I think in today's climate, there's fear around deciding who we love. That choosing to love certain people might feel like a political statement, or loving certain people seems inefficient or illogical or not the easiest thing to do. But it is often these people that God calls us to move toward in love. Those who the rest of the world is rejecting are the ones that we give some of our harvest to. And this lens of love should be evident in our daily lives. And these laws show us that holiness is not about all the crazy mountaintop experiences, like when you go to summer camp and you get your summer camp Jesus high. But holiness should be evident in the mundane tasks of life and our simple interactions with each other. So as we look at this text today, we see God's character revealed, that God is a holy, loving God who cares for the poor, who's compassionate and hospitable. And the deeper we go into relationship with God, the more we reflect God's image. We are set free from the pharaohs of the world because we know that we are children of God, so we serve God alone. And our holiness, our distinctness, is something that people will notice as we live differently in a chaotic world. And it's not moral superiority, which would make us condemn others for not following our rigid rules, but instead, it is radical love and hospitality. And as a people called to be holy, because our Lord is holy, as we read in verse 2, people will look at the church and be able to say that the church's primary characteristic is love. And love is not just a conjuring up of positive emotions for the people that annoy you. It's not just a feeling, but love is acted out. It's love for neighbor, hospitality for the foreigner, and compassion for the marginalized. So before I close, I want to address a voice of our culture that is very dangerous, a pharaoh of our culture, if you will, and that is the voice of go do. We might read this text today and think God is calling us to do more, to add more onto our schedules, to spend all of our extra time volunteering, and to go solve all of the world's problems. And we're thinking, yeah, right, God, I don't have any extra time. I have zero extra hours to give to volunteering, and also I can't solve the world's problems, so sorry. But this is not what God is calling us to do. God is shaping what we are already doing to look different than how everyone else is doing it. God is saying, look at the way you handle your resources. Look at the way you do business. Look at the way you treat people. Look at the ways you show gratitude. Are you doing these things in a way that reflect the image of God, or in a way that reflects the voices around you? So a few years ago, a church family from my home in Oregon started asking themselves how they could better love those around them. And so they started with their neighbors in the cul-de-sac they lived in. Like, that's a good place to start. And we know that, like, Jesus, when Jesus says love your neighbor, Jesus really just means everyone. But they decided that starting with their actual physical neighbors was a good place to start. And so at first they started doing small things like making extra portions of dinner every night and taking it to the older folks in the community who had a harder time cooking, or people who were single and lived alone, and like making portions for yourself when you're single is like really awkward. So serving people in small ways like this, just making more food when they cooked dinner. And they noticed that this started building more meaningful relationships in their community. And so they got inspired and tried a few other practices, and they got crazy. And instead of retreating to their backyard and hanging out on their porch, they like moved all of their furniture to their front yard. And so instead, I know this is crazy and revolutionary. So instead of going to their backyard and being like in the privacy and comfort of their backyard, they went to their front yard. And so they were at their front just having community, and they would notice neighbors walking by, walking their dog or with their kids, and they would stop and engage and have conversations. And they did other crazy things, like instead of pulling into their driveway and going in the garage and then closing the garage door so you get out of your car and you're like alone and already in your house, they started parking in their driveway and then getting out and just being outside and not going straight into the garage and seeing people around them. And they noticed that this was also a great way of building relationships. And so they went even further and stole an idea from one of Bob Goff's books. Have you guys heard of Bob Goff? He wrote Love Does and Everybody Always, very popular books. And they started a neighborhood parade. And this is kind of a weird parade because everybody is invited to participate, but no one's invited to watch. Like, you have to be in the parade. So it's like the whole thing, like you're walking, like little kids have like their wagon with their stuffed animals in it, or they're carrying their stroller with their doll in it, and everybody's waving and smiling and they're going down the street, but there's just no one watching. So it's like a normal parade, but not really. And they found, you know, the first time they did this, only a few people showed up because it's kind of weird. But eventually, over the past few years, this has turned into something that not only that people liked doing, but something that their neighborhood looks forward to. Because this family knows that there's certain practices that they take on are helping them love the neighbors around them. They asked God how they could love others, and they started doing this with normal daily things like cooking dinner and sitting outside. And I think it's important for us to know that God is a God that delivers people from slavery, but God is also a God that shows up in front porch conversations and crazy awkward neighborhood parades. And I think God is calling us to show up here too.
Please stand.